Masechet Baba Kama Daf Pehe. Omdim Kama Adam Kayose Baze Rose Litol. The Mishnah is talking about the five different payments that one has to give if a human being causes damage to another human being. And one of them is the evaluation of pain. So the Mishnah described how do we evaluate the number, the monetary amount. We estimate another person of similar type, similar build, how much would that person take? How much money would that person accept in order to receive this level of pain? We ask them, would you take $1,000, $2,000? Okay, so that would be pain alone, and you could have a case of pain alone without damage to a limb, for example, a burn on someone's fingernail. So the fingernail itself will grow out, will be okay. It's not going to cause any permanent damage or loss of limb, but the feeling of pain will be a lot. So how much would you take to experience that kind of pain? Would you take this number or that number? And that's how much the perpetrator has to pay the victim. That was the Mishnah. Now the Gemara asks, Sal bimkom nezek hechi shaminan. I understand how to evaluate pain when there is no injury, but how do we evaluate pain when there is an injury? In other words, how do we separate the payment for nezek, for the injury itself, from the pain? Amar Avu Dishmuel, Omdim Kama Adam Rose Litol, Liktoa Lo Yado. So the father of Shmuel says, we estimate how much would a person take for his hand to be cut off. Now we ask about the statement, doesn't seem to answer the question. Liktoa Lo Yado, Lo Sa'ad Lichudehu, Hakulu Hamisha Deverim Ika. Wait, amount of money that someone would accept for his hand to be cut off, that's not pain alone. That payment would include all five things, right? How much would you accept for your hand to be cut off? That means that you're not going to have a hand and you won't be able to use it in the future, and medical costs and pain embarrassment and not being able to work. So that would include everything. That doesn't answer the question. We want to know pain alone. How do we separate the amount for pain from the injury when there is an injury? And furthermore, are we dealing with crazy people? What kind of person would accept any money for his hand to be cut off? I mean, there's no money in the world that person would take to not have a hand. So only a crazy person would accept such a deal in the first place. So that can't be what Abu Dishmuel meant. Ela liktoa yado hakitu'ah. Rather, he must have meant to cut off his hand that is already severed. In other words, he has a withered hand or is already a partial amputee, and then to either cut off something that is cannot usable anyway. So here, there is injury, but the injury is not a loss of, it's not a new loss of a limb. The limb was already not usable. So how much would a person take to get a further amputation? Let's say, another section. But we respond that this also is not, we can't isolate pain in this example either, because this is not pain alone. There is also going to be embarrassment. A person will feel humiliated and embarrassed that a part of his body is being cut off and will be thrown to the dogs to eat. This is also embarrassment. So we want to know, we want a case of pain alone in a case of injury. Ela omdim kama adam rose litol liktoa lo yado muchtav la malchut ben sam la saif amri hacha name la shakil umsair nafshe. Rather, we estimate how much money a person would be willing to accept to have his hand cut off in a case where it was already decreed by the government that his hand is going to be cut off. Someone's living in like Saudi Arabia or somewhere whereby for stealing, they say, okay, we're cutting off your hand. So the hand is already gone. It's already going to be cut off. That's a foregone conclusion. Now the only question is, there's two ways to do it. But the government executioner can do it with anesthesia, using some kind of a drug, or can do it without anesthesia, just with a sword. So how much would a person be willing to take In order that the government says, listen, we're going to use anesthesia, but if we offer you $1,000, would you do it without anesthesia? The person says, no, I wouldn't do it. How about for $5,000? So maybe a person would say yes, right? What is the number for a person to be willing to experience that pain? So that would be the case. But we respond to that. Here also, a normal person does not accept money to cause himself pain. In other words, most people, normal people, will not, no matter how much you give them, are not going to take money to experience this extreme pain like that. But the other way around, there is a number. How much would a person, again, that the government already decreed that they're going to cut off his hand, and they are going to do it without anesthesia, just with a sword. But they say, listen, if you pay us, executioner says to the victim, if you pay us a certain amount, then we will use anesthesia. Right, so there is a number that a person would be willing to pay in order to avoid pain. A person is not going to pay $1 billion. They don't have that amount of money. But a person would want to sell everything he has, his home. So there's some number that a person would be willing to pay in order to not experience pain. That is the number, right? You have to imagine that, even though we're talking about a case of someone that actually cut off someone else's hand and caused bodily injury and has to pay for the arm separately. But then in order to estimate, we imagine if a person was going to lose arm anyway, how much would he give? Okay, so that must be what the father of Shmuel was talking about. Now, this works conceptually, just doesn't work in the language. Highly tall, right? It says, not only in the Avud of Shmuel says litol, also in the Mishnah itself said the word litol. So it says, how much money would a person take? Not give. Liten mi ba'ale. According to this answer, it should say, how much would a person want to give in order to avoid that pain? Amar Rav Huna ben Rav Yoshua, litol ze mize ma shenatan ze. So Rav Huna, son of Yoshua, explains that we're talking about how much would the victim, the victim will take from the perpetrator, the amount that such a person would give in order to have anesthesia. So that's the litol is talking about the actual case here of the victim. He takes from the perpetrator what an imagined person that the government is going to cut off his hand would give in order to use drugs instead of just a sword. All right, so that explains how we estimate the pain. Now we get to medical costs. Ripui hikau chayav lerapoto. Someone harms someone else, he has to pay the medical cost. Now we have a baraita, tenor banan. This baraita is going to have three opinions. If someone, in addition, a person cut off his friend's arm, now, you know, or gave him a cut, whatever it is, and now in addition, and now it grew sores. In other words, it got infected. This is a secondary consequence of the primary injury. So if that happens and these growths appear, infection appears, or if the wound itself reopens and did not fully heal, that the perpetrator has to pay not only the medical costs, even for that secondary growth, but that's a direct directly connected to the injury. He has to pay not only medical costs, but also has to pay the loss of livelihood, all the time that he cannot work, whatever his job is. Even if the original wound got better, but now there's a secondary infection that is a direct cause of the first injury, still the perpetrator has to pay the further medical costs and all of the loss of the livelihood during that entire period. However, if there's a growth or infection that's not directly related to the injury and just happens to be nearby at the same time, then the perpetrator does not have to pay the medical costs for that, nor does he have to pay for the loss of livelihood during that. Just makes sense that why should I have to pay for that? This is a different injury, or infection, not related to the injury that I gave you, so I shouldn't have to pay anything for that. That is the opinion of Tanakh Kamma. רבי יהודה אומר, אף מחמת המכה חייב לרפותו, ואינו חייב ליתן לו דמי שבתו. רבי יהודה is more lenient on the perpetrator, and he says, if the infection is directly resultant of the injury, then yes, the perpetrator has to pay the medical costs, but does not have to pay the loss of livelihood. Loss of livelihood is only while the primary injury is getting better, but the secondary sores that you have to pay for medical costs, but not the time that it takes that he can't work. Hachamim omrim shibto urfuato kol she'ar b'shevet chayav b'ripui v'sheino chayav b'shevet eino chayav b'ripui. The third opinion, which is Hachamim, are even more lenient on the perpetrator, and he says that the loss of livelihood and the medical costs go together. As long as he has to pay the loss of livelihood, he has to pay medical costs, but if he doesn't have to pay the loss of livelihood, he doesn't have to pay the medical costs. And both of these, he only has to pay for the primary injury, but for the secondary infections and sores and growths, whatever, he does not have to pay anything at all, not even for those medical costs. Okay, that's the end of the Braita. We analyze. B'mai kami palge. Amar Abba ashkachtin hul rabbanan bebe rav diyatbe veka amre. Hacha b'maka nitena le'eged kami palge. So Rabba says, I found the sages in the study of the hall of the rabbi, and they were explaining it as follows, that the difference between Tanakama and Rabbi Yehuda is about whether one can wrap a wound in a bandage, right? This would be more comfortable for the victim to have a bandage around it. However, the bandage itself can have side effects. If it's, it can cause further infection if the bandage is not cleaned and is too heavy and it doesn't allow it to get to heal properly. So the question is it permitted for the victim to wear a bandage? And if it is, then the perpetrator has to pay for those secondary infections and sores. So Rabbanan sevre makani tenale eged. The rabbis say, yes, it's proper to put a bandage on a wound, and it's good for it, it's good for the person, and therefore any secondary consequences of the bandage itself is also the responsibility of the perpetrator to pay everything, medical costs and loss of livelihood. Rabbi Yehuda sabar maka lo nitena le'eged. Ripui detena bekera michayav shevet ela tena bekera la michayav. Rabbi Yehuda, whoever says, no, you're not supposed to put a bandage on it. And so, because the victim did not care for it properly and put a bandage, and that caused the secondary problems, so the perpetrator is still responsible for medical costs, only because the pasuk says, verapo yerape, it repeats the verb. And the repetition of the verb teaches that one has to pay even for secondary medical costs, even though the injured party didn't do the right thing by putting on this bandage. But the for loss of livelihood, that there it says, rak shivto yiten. It only says it one time. And so since it only says it one time, he only has to pay for the primary injury and the time that that will take to heal, but not the secondary one that is caused by the bandage. V'amina lehu ana. The Rabbah says, I was there among the sages, and I said to them, imaka lo nitena le'eged ripui nami lamechayev. He said, that doesn't make sense. If you're not supposed to put a bandage on a wound, then he should still not even have to pay the medical cost, even though it says it twice. But everybody agrees on the principle that an unrelated injury, the perpetrator does not have to pay. And so this is something that the victim did. He's not supposed to put a bandage on it, so the perpetrator should not be responsible at all. Rather, in fact, everybody agrees that it is a good idea to put a regular bandage on a wound, and therefore the perpetrator is going to be responsible somewhat is going to be responsible for the secondary injuries. However, one should not put an excessive bandage. You can't put one that's too thick, that won't let any air in, that is just going to allow it to fester and be infected. So that's what the machloket is about. This kind of case where someone put a bandage, but they put an excessive bandage. So, Rabbi Yehuda sabar kevan de lo nitena leged yetera ripui detna bekera michayev shebet lo tena bekera la michayev. So Rabbi Yehuda says, listen, you were allowed to put a bandage, but you went and put an excessive bandage. Since you were allowed to put some bandage, so therefore the perpetrator is still somewhat responsible. And since the pasuk says medical costs double, so therefore he has to pay that. But for the loss of livelihood, where the pasuk only says one verb, and you went and put an excessive bandage, the perpetrator does not have to pay. However, v'rabbanan sabre kevan ditna be kera beripui, ashevet nami mechayev ditkash leripui. And the rabbis, the first opinion in the Braita, say that since the pasuk doubled, talking about medical cost, and right next to it, it's the word right before, it talks about rakshibto yiten, verapo yirape. So since they're juxtaposed to each other, we apply the law of medical costs also to loss of livelihood. And since it is appropriate to put a bandage on it, so what? If you put an excessive bandage, double pasuk says you have to pay medical costs, and even if you would agree with that, and Rabbanan just add that we're going to juxtapose the verb about paying livelihood, and therefore you have to pay that as well. Rabbi Yehuda Saban Shevet LaMechayev DeMi'ater HaChamana Rak. Rabbi Yehuda says, yeah, I know, even though the word for Shevet is right next to the word, the two words for Ripui, nevertheless, the first word in that phrase says Rak, and Rak is a limiting word, Rak Shivto, that limits and says you will have to pay Shifta, loss of livelihood, only in some cases, only in a case where the injury was appropriately cared for, and nevertheless infection spread, then the perpetrator has to pay for the loss of livelihood. But if not, if they put an excessive bandage, he only has to pay medical cost, and the Rak says, and not livelihood in such a case. V'rabbanan, and Rabbanan, what are they going to do with that word Rak? Rak sheleshelo mechamata makahu da'ata. The word Rak comes to exclude an injury or infection that is not because of the first injury. If it just happens to be that while he is sick and getting better from the primary injury, he happens to get a different infection, different growth, different problem, so that's what Rak says, that if he ends up having to remain home and not be able to work for a longer period of time, then everybody would agree that the perpetrator is not responsible for that unrelated injury. Ulrabanan batra e damre koshecha b'shevet chay b'ripui v'chol she'eno chay b'shevet eno chay b'ripui ripui detana be'kera l'mali. Now the third opinion in the Braita, which was Chachamim, the second Chachamim in there, in that Braita, who say that only if you pay livelihood, then you have to pay medical costs. But if you don't have to pay livelihood, then you don't have to pay medical costs. So according to them, for this secondary injury caused by this excessive bandage, one would not have to pay anything at all. And if so, what does the doubling of the verb for medical costs, verapo yerape, come to teach me? Oh, very famous and important baraita from the school of Rabbi Ishmael, that verapo yerape teaches that a doctor has permission to heal. One might have thought that if someone gets sick, then this is God's will, that he should be sick. And so, if God wants him to get better, so you could pray, do mitzvot, and maybe God will have mercy on the person. But if God wants him to be sick, then it's not in our ability or permission to try to heal the person. And there are some religions out there that actually follow this and refuse to get any medical intervention. But here we learn from here, v'rapo yirape, that there is a commandment that not only is it permitted to try to heal someone, it's commanded to save a life, or to bring restore someone back to health, is a great mitzvah, that's part of our job, is to help people. So therefore he uses the doubling of the verb in order to teach the permissibility and even commandment to heal people. And this applies not only to natural, when a human being causes injury, but also to natural diseases. Also, it is permitted and even commanded. Okay, Tenor Banan. Minayin shim alu bo simachim mechamata makah v'nistara makah shechayav l'rapoto bechayav liten lo shibto. Talmud lomar, rak shibto yiten v'rapo yirape. A related braita about the same subject. How do we know that if there was a primary injury and then there was a secondary growths or infection, or that the wound reopened, that the perpetrator has to pay for the medical costs and has to pay for any further loss of livelihood, because the pasuk says, "Rak shifto yiten," he has to pay for loss of livelihood, and "dapo yedape," he has to pay for everything that is connected with the primary injury. Well, what if it's not connected to the primary injury? So that's rak comes to exclude that. So that's we just saw that the word rak indeed means that, and according to Chachamim. Rabbi Yose bar Yehuda omer af mechamat hamakav patush nemar rak. Rabbi Yose, the son of Rabbi Yehuda, he happens to be the son of Rabbi Yehuda in the previous Beraita, and he says the same thing. He says, even if it's because, even if the secondary injury is because of the primary injury, still one does not have to pay, because it says the word rak, which comes to exclude payment. Now, what exactly is it excluding? There are two interpretations of Rabbi Yose bar Yehuda's opinion. So some say that even if the secondary injury is a consequence of the first injury, nevertheless, the perpetrator does not have to pay anything at all, not medical costs and not even loss of compensation. A loss of livelihood, kirabanan batre, and that follows the third opinion in the Beraita above, which was the second Rabbanan opinion. But others interpret this statement of Rabbi Yose bar Yehuda when he says patur, he meant patur only from paying for the loss of livelihood for that secondary infection. But for the medical costs, he does have to pay. And if so, he follows his father's opinion that says, well, but it only says the double language for medical payment, and therefore one has to pay the medical payment, but not for the further loss of livelihood because of the secondary infection. Amar Mor. Now, going back to that Braita, Yachol afilu shelo mechamata makah, tamud lomar rak. So now we ask, if something is was a different injury, not related to the first one at all right? So some other infection or growth that happened somewhere else has nothing to do with the primary injury. We learn that the perpetrator does not have to pay from the word rak. But do we even need an extra word to teach us that? Wouldn't that be obvious? Why would anybody think that he would have to pay? Amri, my shelo mechamat hamakah kedetanya, resh aval devrei rofe v'achal devash o kol mine metika, v'pnei shedevash o kol mine metika kashin l'makah ve'ela makato gar gutni yachol yeh chayav l'rapoto tamod lomar rak. We have a braita that explains, what does it mean that there's something unrelated to the original injury? If it's completely unrelated, then obviously the perpetrator doesn't have to pay anything. But we're talking about a case where the perpetrator caused some kind of injury. And now the injured party went to the doctor, and the doctor said, don't eat certain foods. But then the injured party didn't listen to the doctor's advice. So he didn't follow what the doctor said, and the doctor told him not to eat honey or sweet food. It's bad for infections. And he went and ate it anyway, right? Because honey and sweet foods are not good for wounds. And then it developed this gargutni disease. So I might think that maybe the perpetrator does have to pay. In other words, it's not totally unrelated. It's not like the perpetrator cut off his right arm and then he got some kind of growth on his foot. That would be completely unrelated. We're talking about where it is the wound itself that developed a growth, but it's because the victim did not listen to the doctor's advice. That's where the word rak comes and says the perpetrator is not responsible. You didn't follow what the doctor's ordered, so I'm not responsible for the further infection that happens after that. My gargutni, what is this disease called gargutni? Amarabaye na'ata kerichta. It is necrosis. And my asute, and how do you heal it? Ahala vekira vekalba. Some kind of, it seems like aloe and wax and wine dregs. The aloe can be gotten from this ice plant, which is right here. So that's how to get, that's how to heal it. Viamarle asyach ana. Now, interesting case. The perpetrator who caused the injury happens to be a doctor. And he says, listen, instead of paying your medical bills by you going to some other doctor, I will heal you myself for free. And that way, I don't have to pay. Is that permitted? Can the perpetrator doctor get away with that? And the victim could say, no way. You seem to me like a predatory lion. You're the one that caused me the injury in the first place. I don't trust you to go and heal it. I want to go to a third party, separate doctor. They have a right to say that. And if the perpetrator says, listen, instead of going to, you know, your regular doctor, I'm going to bring you a doctor for free, right? No cost. I have a friend and he'll do it for free, the injured party can say to him, a doctor who heals people for free is worth what he's paid. In other words, you want to pay the doctor because you want to make sure he's doing a good job, and then he's more responsible if he's getting paid. If the doctor comes, is doing it as a favor, doing it for free, then if he gets busy, well, whatever, he'll do half a job and won't follow through. So you don't want a doctor who's doing a favor for the perpetrator or is a free doctor. He's probably worth what he is charging. And so, I want to go to the best doctor. And even if he charges more, then you have to pay it. You caused the injury. And if the perpetrator says, I will bring you a doctor from a faraway place. Hey, he's cheaper, whatever. He happens to be passing through from a different country. The victim can say, I don't want that, because a doctor from a different place blinds the eye. In other words, he has no incentive to heal. He could say blinds the eye either that he causes injury or that he turns a blind eye to the injury. He just makes up something and says, okay, take this. And then he's gone an hour later. And so no one can follow up. He got paid and he's on his way. And so because there's no follow-up, one should not trust an itinerant doctor. Ve'i amar le he'ach, hav li ledidi, ba'ana masena nafshai. And on the other hand, let's say the victim says, you know what, I don't want you to pay the doctor directly, give me the money, and I'll go and I'll heal myself, and I'll find a doctor and I'll heal myself, I'll figure it out, right? Just pay me directly. In that case, the perpetrator can say, no, I don't want you to do that, because you then may take the money and be negligent with yourself and not go to the doctor, and you just keep the money, and then it will get worse. Then the injury will get worse, and then you're going to come and demand even more money from me, right? I'm going to pay you. He says, just give me $1,000 now. I'm going to give you $1,000. You're not going to take care of it because you're going to go spend the money on something else. And then your injury is going to get worse. Then you're going to come and say, hey, now I need $2,000 because it got worse and I need more medical attention. So no, I want to make sure you really go to the doctor. I'm only paying the doctor directly. And if the victim says, okay, we'll settle a fixed price. And that's it. I can't ask you for any more money. $1,000 for all my medical costs, and I won't bother you. And I'll decide what I want to do with it. Right? Maybe I'll not go to the doctor. Maybe I won't, and I'll buy a television with it. And so the perpetrator can say, all the more so, then you're going to be negligent and not take care of yourself. And although you are not going to take more money from me because we already agreed on the fixed price, still, people are going to go around and see that your injury has gotten so bad and worse, and they're going to say, oh, what happened? And they're going to say, this perpetrator, he did it. And they're going to call me a damaging ox. It's bad for my reputation. I don't want you to walk around with this broken arm that doesn't get fixed, and everybody keeps saying, oh, the perpetrator, look what he did to this guy. I want you to get proper medical attention and look better, and then say, oh, this guy, he did the damage, but look, he paid for the recovery, right? So it's in the direct interest of the perpetrator to make sure that the victim gets better, and therefore he can demand to pay the doctor directly. Tana, b'chulan mishtalemin b'mkom nezik, mina hane mile.
Braita teaches that the perpetrator has to pay all the other four payments, even when there is injury. It's not only when they're separate, if there's pain only or medical cost only, but even if there is a physical, a permanent injury, like cutting off the hand, still he has to pay the other four things: pain, medical cost, loss of livelihood, and humiliation. What is the source for this? Amar Rav Zevid Mishmet Rav Amar Kira Pesa Tahat Pasa Yiten Sa'ar Bimkom Nezik. Rav Zevid says the name of Rava, that since the Pasuk says a wound for a wound, this teaches that one has to pay for the pain of the wound, even when there is physical damage. So that's how we learn, at least regarding Sa'ad, and maybe from there we can learn for all the other things as well. Hi, mi ba'eled. Then we ask, hold on, pesa tahat pasa, I need that pasuk for a different law, l'rabot shogekim ezid ve'ones kerason, that a perpetrator has to pay, even if he does it unwittingly, as if he did it intentionally. And if it was circumstances beyond control, he still has to pay, the same as if he did it willingly. In the cases of a human injury, even if someone is negligent and didn't purposefully mean to harm someone else, nevertheless, you have to pay. So that's what we learn from Pesa Tahat Pasa. So you can't use it for something else. Im ken nichtov rachamana Pesa Be Pasa. My Pesa Tahat Pasa Shema Mina Terte. Now, if it was only to teach that, then it could have said in a shorter way, wound for wound. It's hard to translate, but without the word tahat. So why does it add also the word tahat, a wound corresponding to a wound? So in fact, we can learn two things from it. Number one, that one has to pay even if the injury is unwitting. And second, that one has to pay not only for the injury itself, but also for the pain and other types of compensation. Or a different source, that one has to pay medical costs even when there is injury because of the double verb, rapo yerape. He shall surely heal him. So that means he has to heal him even when he's also paying for the arm, right? I'm paying for this, the difference in value with an arm and without an arm. Nevertheless, I also have to pay for the medical cost. Now we ask, hold on, you cannot use the double verb to teach that, because we need it for the Braita of Rabbi Ishmael, that we learn from here that a doctor has permission to apply medical healing practice. And you don't say that, well, God wanted him to be sick. No, a doctor is supposed to heal. It's permitted. So we need the pasuk already. We can't use it to teach that you have to pay medical costs even when there is an injury. If it was only teaching to be Ishmael's teaching, then it could have said, and a doctor will heal. But the fact that it says, verapo yerape, is more unusual, and so we learn not only that doctors can heal, but also that one has to pay medical costs even when there is damage. Hold on, but we also use this same doubling of a verb earlier to teach that one has to pay even for secondary infections. And so the verb needs to be doubled, so we already used that. No, it could have said a simpler statement and used the same verb twice. Why change it up? Rapo is an infinitive absolute. Yerape is the imperfect or future. Why is it using two different tenses and putting them together? It's a more unused, that's more different. Shema mina, liten refua b'mkom nezik. So we can learn from here also that one has to pay medical costs even when there is an injury. So we can learn all three things from this phrasing. Okay, good. So now that we see a couple of different sources that one has to pay the different items when there is an injury, we can learn from this also, we can infer from this that also when there's no injury, one has to pay. And the question is, how can we come up with cases for each of these four other payments where there would be no physical permanent injury, but yet there would be a requirement to pay the other four items. So sa'ar ke dekatane, sa'ar ke va'o b'shvud, o b'masmer, avilo sepon makom sheno se chabura. We already mentioned in the earlier a case in the Mishnah of pain alone. It would be, for example, if someone burns someone else with a skewer or a hot nail, and even if he does it on the victim's fingernail, where it's not going to make a permanent bruise, may not make any bruise at all because the nail is kind of hard, but you still feel pain through it. Anyway, the nail, even if it gets a little brown, it'll grow out. So there's no permanent damage. It's not going to make the person less able to work. And therefore, there's no injury. And yet, one has to pay for the feeling of pain. Ripui davakat ible midi. Vesalik vaiti le sama vacharifa vachvere le bisre. Dasirich lot be le sama le ankute gavna de bisre. How can you have a case where you have to pay a medical cost when you didn't cause an injury in the first place? It would be a case where the victim, he had something that was hurting him. Now, this person, his friend, comes trying to help and brings him some kind of drug or ointment that is very strong, too strong, not realizing or not being careful enough. And this ended up causing his skin to become white and the discoloration of his skin. And now, because the perpetrator, who maybe may have been trying to help by bringing this maybe acidic type of ointment and causing a skin discoloration, has an obligation to bring another drug to fix what he caused, the damage that he caused. So even though this is also not an injury, first of all, it's not permanent, or it's not causing him a loss of function, just a skin discoloration. He can still, you know, work on the farm or do whatever he does. So this is not called an injury, and yet, because he gave him some of the wrong ointment, he does have to provide a further ointment in order to heal him. Shebet dehadke beindrona ubatele. How would you have to pay for someone's loss of livelihood when you didn't cause them an injury in the first place? Let's say I go and I take my friend and I grab him and lock him into a room. This indrona is a Greek word for the men's quarters or a lounge room. So I take him and I throw him in there and I lock him in and he can't go to work that day. So I have to pay for his loss of livelihood. I didn't cause him any injury. He's totally fine, but I have to pay. Boshet derak le be'apeh. How can you cause humiliation without injury? If you spit at someone, right? That's very insulting. Even though it doesn't cause any physical injury, still you have to pay, right? How much would a person be willing to give to someone else to be spat upon? So there's some number, and that's how much he has to pay. Shevet rino tokilu hu shomer kishuid. The Mishnah said that for payment of loss of livelihood, you estimate based on the hourly wages of a cucumber watchman, which is a very low wage. Minimal wage. Now, even if the person has a better job, let's say the person is a pitcher, a baseball pitcher, and he gets $1 million a year, but you already include that, the Mishnah explained, in the nezek. You say, how much is this? How much was he worth before, and how much was he worth now? So, since that loss of ability is already included in the nezek, therefore, the loss of livelihood is what he can do, now without the hand, and a cucumber watchman just has to sit there or walk around and make sure that animals or thieves don't come and take the cucumbers. So that's why he only gets that amount. Now, Braita is going to elaborate on this law. Now, if you say that the law of the Torah is lacking justice, if you complain about this law that the victim should only get, $5 an hour as a cucumber watchman, he can complain and say this is not fair, because when the victim recovers, he won't only be a cucumber washman, but he'll be able to carry buckets, right? Maybe he can't be a pitcher, but he can do something, carry buckets, or he can travel as an agent and make deliveries help people do business. So there's still things that he can do. His mind is sharp and he can walk. So he can do other things that would pay $20, would pay $40 an hour. So the victim could say, no, I want you to pay me a higher amount. This seems unfair. And the answer is, midat hadin lo lakta, shekvar natano deme yado u deme raglo. No, the Torah's law is not lacking in justice because, yeah, all that was already included in whatever value he had with his arm that he was able to do before, or with his leg, that was able to do before. The perpetrator is already paying him the difference between all the things that he could have done before and what he can do now without that. And so that loss is already included, and that's why he only gets the very minimal wage of a cucumber watchman. Amadaba kata et yado, noten lo deme yado. Shebet ro'in oto kiilu hu shomer kishuin. Shibet et raglo, noten lo deme raglo. Veshebet ro'in oto kiilu hu shomer et hapetach. Lava elaborates further. It's not necessarily a cucumber watchman for everyone. That fits the example of someone who gets his hand cut off. Then the perpetrator has to pay the value of his hand, that's the nezek, and the loss of livelihood, as we estimate how much he would make as a cucumber watchman. However, if the injury is different, let's say he broke his leg, then he has to pay the value of the leg that's cut off. And in that case, he wouldn't be able to be a cucumber watchman because he has to walk around the field. But he would be able to be a doorman to an opening of a courtyard, because that person doesn't have to walk around. And so without a leg, he can still be a doorman. Rava continues and explains that if someone knocked out someone else's eye, so he has to pay the value of the eye, that's the nezik, and he has to pay him as a grinder. Even someone who has no sight can still take a mortar and pestle and grind. It kind of works by itself. You don't have to see what you're doing. And so he would be paid as a grinder. But if someone causes someone else to be deaf, he has to pay his entire value, meaning, you know, how much, whatever he was worth before, and he has to pay the full amount as nezek. There is no type of employment that this person can do. And so in other words, his entire value will be included in the nezek payment, and there will be no payment for his loss of livelihood, because as a deaf person, he won't be able to work at all. Now, why not? One reason is because he won't be able to communicate to a deaf person and to tell him, you know, I want you to do this or that. And so he can't even be a watchman or a grinder or anything at all. And so again, this is in the olden days when they didn't have a way to communicate with a deaf person. So he still gets compensated properly, because all that will be included. Instead of, you know, if you before, if he has no hand, and you take the value of a person with a hand, and then you subtract the value of the person without a hand, which is still going to be substantial value, because even without a hand, a person can do lots of jobs. But if you take someone that has hearing, and then the value of someone without hearing, in terms of a job market or as a slave, is zero. So he actually has to pay the full amount of the person as part of the nezek, and it doesn't have to pay anything as part of the loss of livelihood. But that amount will end up being actually more.
Now, Rava gave us these different stages, these different examples, and that would have to pay livelihood in different amounts, and also pay nezek in different amounts, because you subtract how much a person with an arm is worth, with an arm and without an arm. Now, Rava's question is, what if the perpetrator first cut off the victim's arm? But they did not evaluate him. They didn't go to Beit Din and have him officially evaluated how much he was worth before the arm and without the arm. And in the meantime, the perpetrator went and further broke the victim's leg.
But they still didn't get a chance to officially evaluate his worth at that point either. And then the perpetrator blinded him also. Still, they didn't go to Bet Din yet. And in the end, he also made him deaf. So how do we calculate the amount of nezik in this case? On the one hand, do we say, since they did not do any evaluations in the meantime, so then we just look at it all together, and the perpetrator will have to pay his entire value, right? Even if it was only made him deaf, he would pay the entire value, because now won't be able to work anymore. So we could skip all the other steps. Doesn't matter. He'll just pay the whole value. Or do we go back and evaluate the amount that the perpetrator would have to pay for each and every individually separately, and then add up that entire number? It may come out to a different amount than treating it all as one at the end. Rava explains the two sides further. Now, the difference between two ways of calculation actually will only affect whether he has to pay for pain and humiliation for each step or not, because the other ones, it wouldn't matter. Certainly, no matter what, the perpetrator will not have to pay for the nezik and the medical cost and the loss of livelihood separately for each stage. Because since he will have to pay for all of him, since he made him deaf, and once a person is deaf, we saw before, so then they won't be able to work. The perpetrator has to pay his entire value. It's as if he killed him, and therefore he has to pay his entire value. So it doesn't really matter if you're paying it, in increments of what's the difference between how much he was worth with a hand, without a hand, and then with a leg, without a leg. Doesn't matter. He's paying the entire value originally when he was totally healthy. And on the slave market, he's going to have to pay that full amount and assume that now he cannot work anymore. So he doesn't have to pay for those, and he has to fully heal him, no matter what all kinds of injuries he has. So those, the person will pay as it is now. It will make a difference by changing it into increments. However, sar uboshet miyad dechot echada v'chada yahib, teha hava le sar uboshet. But the question is, does he have to pay for the pain and humiliation of each and every step? Because he did have pain. He had pain when he took off his arm, and then pain in the leg. And he also had humiliation. And each occurrence, each was a separate event that he was further and further humiliated. So do we look at each of those separately, or do we calculate the whole thing at the end? And if you say that since they did not evaluate him each and every step, so he has to pay just the full amount all at the end. You would just do a full evaluation at the end of everything from before and after. Then what within the case of that, let's say they did actually make an evaluation after each injury. Let's say they did the evaluation at each step, but the perpetrator didn't actually pay at that after each injury. So it goes to Bet Din. They say, okay, listen, you have to pay this amount, but the perpetrator didn't pay, and ends up causing a second injury. They evaluated, but the perpetrator still didn't pay. So do we say that since he was evaluated each time, he has to pay each of those monetary amounts separately? Or since he didn't pay after each evaluation, so now we just do one full evaluation and pays the sum and pays the entire amount as if it happened just in one step? And this question we leave standing. Baruch Adonai L'olam. Amen v'amen.